The gospel reading for today is from the 22nd chapter of Matthew, verses 15 through 22. Then the Pharisees went and plotted to entrap him in what he said. So they sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and teach the way of God in accordance with the truth, and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality. Tell us then, what you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. And he said to them, "Whose head is this and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Then he said to them, "Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard this, they were amazed, and they left him and went away. The word of the Lord.
If you grew up with siblings, or if you're a parent and you have more than one kid, you're familiar with phrases like, "He hit me. No, she hit me." Or, "He started it. No, she started it." Right? I don't know if you remember, if you had a sibling. I remember with my brother starting to get into it with my brother, you know, where it would start with a little disagreement and then a little bit louder voices and eventually a push and eventually a hit. And pretty soon one kid or the other is running to mom or dad saying, "Mom, he hit me," or "Dad, she hit me." And then the other one comes and says, "No, he hit me." And if we remember these things, we know that there's a pattern to this kind of thing, where the first time, unless the parent's incredibly busy, they'll step in and they'll go to wherever the problem is and they'll say, "Okay, who did what? Say you're sorry, let's move on." And they'll go back to doing what they're doing. And within a few seconds, you'll hear the fight start again, right? And someone will come out and say, "He hit me, no, he hit me." And you'll try to deal with it again. But there's basically like a 2 or 3 or 4 time limit where the parent will try to help. And then eventually, after 2 or 3 times, the parent is no longer going to deal with who started it and who did what and whose fault it was. After so many times, the parent just wants it to stop, right? And so the toddler comes in and says, "He hit me, she hit me." And the parent just says something like, "Stop fighting now," right? And you separate the kids and you tell them to go do something else. Because after a while, you just can't get into who started it and whose fault it was and who did what, because everyone's at fault at a certain point. So I wonder if God ever feels the same way with us who are his children, right? Does God ever feel like the parent who just says, "Stop fighting now. I don't care who started it"? I think this is a dynamic that plays out a lot in faith. So if we turn to today's story, you know, it ends with one of Jesus' most famous lines. It's a line something like, "Give to God what is God's and Caesar what is Caesar's." And it's a memorable line, right? God's what is God's and Caesar's what is Caesar's. But I wonder, what is this story about, right? If that's the culmination of this story, what is it trying to tell us? Well, if we heard our gospel story, we'll know that the immediate matter, the immediate subject of this story is that Jesus' rivals come to Jesus with a question about paying taxes. And a lot of people have heard this and they've taken it as a cue that this is a story about what God thinks of taxes, right? We read this story and then we could tell what God wants us to do with taxes. And the funny thing is, people who read it in this way, people who think it's about taxes, come up with completely different explanations for what it means. Some people say that this story is about how we should pay our taxes. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, right? Pay your taxes on time. Other people take exactly the opposite view. They say that this story isn't really about paying your taxes. It's about how taxes are the realm of secular things, and God doesn't care, and so we have to figure out on our own what's right for taxes. Well, I have the benefit of having the pulpit, so I get to tell you what I think it's about. I don't think this story is primarily about taxes at all. That's the surface level issue. It is about discussions about it, but that's only the surface. Underneath the surface, we see a different issue. We see a story that's really about a group of people who come to Jesus and they're trying to get him embroiled in a conflict to hurt Jesus in his ministry. So it's about what Jesus does when faced with conflict. So that's what I'd like to think about with you today, how this teaches us about conflict. But before I get there, I want to back up and look at the wider context that leads up to this story. So before this story happens, Jesus has been doing his ministry for a while. And Jesus is the Son of God, and so he's an amazing minister. He's an amazing preacher. He's doing these miracles. He's healing people. And really the whole land, everyone, is enamored with Jesus. They're impressed with Jesus. They want to figure out what Jesus is about. And from the lowly peasant class all the way to the leaders and the religious leaders like Pharisees and Sadducees, people are fascinated by him. And at first, the religious leaders, too, they're kind of interested, and they want to have dialogue with Jesus, and they think he might be a good thing. But before long, when they start seeing what Jesus does and what he says, they start to be more and more worried until eventually they do not like Jesus at all, and they want to shut him down. There are a few reasons that they become so offended by Jesus. Here's a few examples of what turned them off of him. One thing that concerned the religious leaders was that Jesus and his disciples at times broke the Sabbath laws. The Sabbath laws were rules about what you could do on the Sabbath, which for Jewish people was on Saturday. You weren't supposed to do hardly anything. You weren't supposed to pluck grain, for instance. But once Jesus and his disciples were hungry while they were traveling on ministry, and they plucked some corn and ate it, and that was seen as a problem. Another time, the Pharisees got offended because Jesus came across someone who was sick on the Sabbath, and he chose to heal them. And so the Pharisees come to Jesus, and they tell him how inappropriate things like this are, and Jesus doesn't apologize. He says, why would it not be lawful to help people on the Sabbath? Jesus wants us to help people, right? So that's one thing. He broke the Sabbath laws. Another thing that really ate at the leaders is that Jesus and his disciples hung out with the bad people, with sinners, with tax collectors, with prostitutes and foreigners, and so on. He ate with them, that was forbidden. He talked with them, he showed mercy to them, that was forbidden. And again, the leaders didn't like it. And again, they pointed out to Jesus how wrong he was to hang out with sinners. And Jesus' response was, I came to the world to heal the sick and the lost. So why would I refuse to deal with the sick and the lost? One more thing that really offended the leaders, the religious leaders at the time, was when Jesus started declaring forgiveness for people, for everyone, for anyone. This really ate at the religious leaders, because up to this time, it had been their job to decide who was forgiven and who wasn't. And there was this whole list of complex rituals and hoops that people would have to jump through in order to become right with God. And the religious leaders would get to decide what was required. And some people could never get right with God. If you had a disability, if you had a disease like leprosy, if you were blind, that was considered that you were just unclean in the eyes of God and there was nothing you could do. So when Jesus comes along and he starts declaring God's forgiveness for anyone and everyone, this is violating their message, and maybe even more importantly to them, it's taking away their role and their power in society to decide who's in or out. So for these reasons and more, pretty soon the religious leaders want to get rid of Jesus. He's a threat to what they want to do. But the problem is, Jesus is very popular with the people, and they don't want to be seen as directly harming this guy who's very popular. So what do? They come up with someone to do their dirty work for them, and they settle on the Romans. The Romans, of course, were the colonizers, their conquerors. The leaders hated the Romans, but they thought they could be useful, right? The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So they thought, okay, let's get the Romans to take care of Jesus. And they have to come up with a way to get the Romans angry at Jesus. So how do they do it? They think about taxes. Every conqueror, whenever an empire would come in and conquer people, one of the ways you benefit from that is you tax the people you've conquered, and so they were taxing the Jews. And so if they could get Jesus to speak against taxes, then that would be enough to get the Romans to get rid of them. And it turns out that the Jewish people were particularly opposed to paying taxes to Rome. The reason being is that their first commandment was that we shall have no other gods before our God. And one of the parts of that was you never make idols, you don't make a depiction of something. And on every coin that you paid taxes with in Rome was the picture of Caesar, who said that I am a living God. And so for the Jewish people, this felt like paying taxes was kind of like participating in idol worship. So the religious leaders, coming back to our story, say, let's get Jesus to oppose paying taxes. He's a religious guy. He'll say we shouldn't do it. And by doing this, we can get rid of Jesus. Problem solved. The Romans will come in and get rid of him. So they come to Jesus with this question. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? And they're kind of like waiting for him to say the wrong thing. Well, does Jesus fall for the trap? No, he sees through their game right away, and he says, why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? He says, show me the coin. Whose face is on it? And they say, Caesar's. And he says, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. Well, the religious leaders are kind of outmaneuvered intellectually. They don't know what to do. He's put it back in their court. They don't want to get embroiled, and so they've kind of been outmaneuvered, and it's kind of like a touche moment. They say they're touche, and they walk away, back to the drawing board, having to come up with another way to get Jesus in trouble. But what's the takeaway to this story? Is it just a neat little story about how quick-witted Jesus was? If so, that's kind of interesting, but it doesn't really impact our lives in a big way. And as I've already told you, I don't think it's about tax policy specifically, because Jesus really doesn't say a lot about what exactly we should do. I think if there's anything we can learn from the story, once again, it teaches us how to respond to conflict. And that's an important thing, because conflicts and potential conflicts are all around us in life, especially in today's world. I think a lot of people would agree that we live in a time of great division in our country. People disagree about all kinds of things in society. They disagree about personal issues. People disagree about social issues. People disagree about political issues. Conflict in our country abounds everywhere. Sometimes we find them. Sometimes conflicts find us and try to suck us in. And I think a lot of us are kind of feeling conflict fatigued, right? We're just sick of all the fighting and all the division. So what does this story say to people of faith, say to people who want to follow Jesus, about what we should do when we encounter conflict? Well, the truth is, on one level, this story today is about Jesus walking away from conflict, right? Jesus doesn't play their game. He just puts it back to them. He doesn't really engage their conflict. So does this mean that Jesus is fundamentally anti-conflict? Should we, as Jesus' followers, just turn our backs and run away every time there's a conflict if we want to be faithful? Well, the answer is actually no. Jesus was not 100% anti-conflict. In fact, Jesus was a person who often was in conflict when he was doing his ministry. He would have disagreements. He would have debates with people. Jesus once said that following him will cause division in the world, not because he likes division, but because when you follow Jesus, there will be lots of people who don't like it and who will take issue with that. So Jesus isn't fundamentally anti-conflict, but I think Jesus was fundamentally anti-pointless conflict. And there's a difference between constructive conflict and pointless conflict. Pointless conflict is the kind that leads nowhere. Pointless conflict is when you have two people or two groups of people who have no intention of listening to each other, no intention of reconciling, no intention of growing or working things out. These are just people who are looking to fight and disagree. And that's the thing about today's story. This group of people who come on the surface level with a question for Jesus aren't really interested in the question they're asking Jesus. Their goal is to entrap Jesus. Their goal is to politicize Jesus so that the Romans again can come in and take him away. They wanted to throw him into a conflict that would hurt him and his ministry. That would be pointless. And in response to this invitation to jump into a no-win, pointless conflict, Jesus says, essentially, no, I'm not going to play your reindeer games, and he walks away. But like I said, it's important to realize Jesus didn't always walk away from conflict. We can look at other stories when Jesus, you could tell, believed that engaging in conflict was necessary, that it was the right thing, that it was worth it to stand up to people, to try to change minds, to try to save people. Think about the story when Jesus comes across a mob who have found a woman who committed adultery. They're ready to kill her, right? They're ready to stone her for her adultery. And Jesus stands up to the mob and he says, you who are without sin can cast the first stone. That's engaging conflict, right? So Jesus wasn't always against it, but he was against pointless conflict. I think we have a lot to learn from Jesus in this. We don't have to let pointless conflicts and negativity dominate our lives. There are better things to do with our time. There are better things to do with our passions than engage in pointless conflict. So often in today's world, we give our energy to people and to situations that we have no chance of changing, right? Jesus says to these pointless conflicts, let them go and go change the world in another way. Don't avoid the conflicts that need to be engaged, but also don't go looking for pointless conflict. For instance, if you're a person who feels passionate about feeding the hungry, don't go looking for the person who's opposed to feeding the hungry so that you can change them, right? Go actually feed the hungry. That would be a much better thing to do with your passion. If you're really opposed to racism, which is a good thing to be opposed to, don't go on Facebook and look for the most racist person you could find so that you can tell them how wrong they are. That is a waste of energy, right? Go try to change the system. Go build a positive relationship cross-racially. Do something beautiful with your time and energy. For me, in this time in our history, it's such a liberating thing for Jesus to say this to us, right? Build up the things that matter and forget about the naysayers. Not because we hate the naysayers, but because we can't always change people, right? They're God's problem. God will change those people, and we have better things to do with our time. So in conclusion, sometimes Jesus is kind of like the parent who comes along to us and just says, stop fighting pointless fights and go do something beautiful. Go do something positive with your lives. Amen.